Leo Catskill.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, local farmer Eugene Thalman reacts to recent USDA budget cuts. Michelle Long is ready for the 2025 Seeds Initiatives to begin. And we sample maple syrup at Augusta Acres as part of the 2025 Wayne County Self-Guided Tour. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. Coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Forecasters are warning of dangerous weather moving into the deep south today after multiple tornadoes were reported in the Midwest. Robbie Myers is the Emergency Management Director in Butler County, Missouri.
We believe it was multiple tornadoes. We have devastation in very many different parts of our county.
Speaking to CNN, Myers confirmed a fatality in his county and said there is major damage in the community of Poplar Bluff. The Missouri State Highway Patrol says two people died in Ozark County and there are multiple injuries. Yesterday, that storm system whipped up dust storms that led to deadly crashes in Texas and fanned wildfires in several states. Today, the threat of tornadoes is moving east. President Trump's efforts to dismantle the Education Department is raising significant concerns about the potential impact on low-income families. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports.
The Department of Education has long provided essential funding to schools with high percentages of children from low-income families. Eliminating the department could put those funds in jeopardy. The DHS also oversees federal financial aid programs, including Pell Grants, which help low-income students afford college. In response to the Trump administration's efforts, a coalition of 20 Democratic-led states and the District of Columbia have filed legal challenges. The lawsuits argue that only Congress has the authority to abolish a federal department and that such actions could harm students, especially kids from low-income backgrounds and children with disabilities. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Congress has avoided a government shutdown. The Senate passed a short-term spending bill that keeps the government operating for 6 months after 10 Senate Democrats voted to advance it, exposing divisions within the party over how best to counter President Trump's agenda. Canada is reconsidering the purchase of F-35 stealth fighters from the U.S. Dan Karpinchuk reports. Defense Minister Bill Blair says Ottawa is now actively looking at potential alternatives to the fighter.
The comment came just hours after Blair was reappointed as defense minister under the government of new Prime Minister Mark Carney. Portugal also says it would no longer go ahead with the acquisition of the high-tech warplane. This comes as Canada is in the midst of a trade war with the Trump administration after Washington slapped punishing tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. Many Canadians also support getting out of the $19 billion purchase. Blair says Canada may accept the first group of F-35s already paid for, but also look at the Swedish-built Saab Gripen, which was considered before the F-35s. Sweden's proposal would allow the Gripens to be assembled in Canada. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
And from Washington, this is NPR News.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Shantira Jackson talked about the benefits of doing comedy on a cruise ship.
And you know what? It was easy. Everybody's drunk. I've never been funnier.
I'm Peter Sagal. We don't care how you pregame before this week's news quiz with special guest Amanda Seyfried. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, local farmer Eugene Thalman reacts to recent USDA budget cuts. Michelle Long is ready for the 2025 seeds initiatives to begin. And we sample maple syrup at Augusta Acres as part of the 2025 Wayne County self-guided tour. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk Report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
And country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. At 5:01 a.m. on Thursday, the sun will cross the celestial equator from south to north, marking the start of spring. This event is known as the vernal equinox. The equinox marks the midpoint between the sun's lowest path across the sky and the sun's highest path across the sky. Track the location of the sun at noon over the coming weeks and months, and you will see the arc of the sun moving northward. The date of Easter is determined by the vernal equinox. Easter falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox, which will be Sunday, April 20th this year. There are a few interesting things that occur during an equinox. The sun will rise due east, will set due west, and will be directly overhead at the equator at noon. The vernal equinox is a perfect day to determine due east or due west from your yard. The point where the sun meets the horizon at sunrise or sunset will be due east or due west. Also, the length of day and night are nearly equal on the equinox. On Thursday, we will see 12 hours and 9 minutes of daylight. With the sun on a northern trajectory in the sky, the sunrises will be coming earlier in the day and the sunsets will be coming later in the day. The sun will continue to move north in the sky until late June, at which time it will reverse direction and head south. Thursday will be the vernal equinox and the start of spring. For Farming Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. It's Sunday at the Marketplace in Calicone, and I'm stopping by different stands to find out how farmers are feeling about budget freezes. I have in front of me a familiar voice, Eugene Thalman from Sprouting Dreams Farms, but he will introduce himself and talk about his impact.
Hi, this is Eugene Thalman from Sprouting Dreams Farm. I've been affected in a multitude of ways by the funding cut, one being that I am concerned about some of the contracts that I have. I've been assured that my contracts that are in place will be upheld in the fiscal year of 2025. But other things that have been indefinitely frozen is the New Beginner Farmer Training Program from the Cornell Cooperative Extension. That was through ARPA money. That was a really critical program in building the competency of young farmers in our region. And it was a really good way to help bring about positive change on my farm by paying for my expertise to allow me to get to the next steps by using that money for my infrastructure. I'm determining to use the money in that way, but I was using it for good things. It was also building a more solid network of information sharing. And there's many, many downward ripple effects that were negatively impacted by the cancellation of that program. Another thing as well is the Climate Smart Resiliency Grant through PASA, funded through NOFA New York, which was all USDA funding, was also stopped. And that was a way to fast-track the infrastructure to be built on my farm, which would have increased productivity and capacity of food growing. So with those two things, even though it was a climate-smart practice, being a good steward of the land is being climate smart. And it's a way better way of doing things. It's healthier for the environment, the human, and the worker. And it's unfortunate that we're lumping some of the larger climate goals that the political system may be fighting against with really just being a responsible steward of the land.
Very well put, Eugene. Thank you. Anything else?
Eat well to live well.
More information is available at sproutingdreamsfarm.com. In February, Penn State Agriculture held their annual event at the high school in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. I stopped at vendors' tables to get the latest information on this season's initiatives. Here is Michelle Long, sharing enthusiasm for the Seeds organization.
My name is Michelle Long. I'm with SEEDS, that's Sustainable Energy Education and Development Support. And this coming year, we've got a couple programs coming up. We've got a Recycling 101 program. We have a Solar 101 program so people can learn about the basics of solar energy. And we also have some do-it-yourself solar installation workshops coming up. And, of course, our Bookshare, which is in September this year, which is a huge event for the community, opportunity for folks to donate their books and pick up some light reading for the next year. So, yeah, we got a lot of exciting things happening this year. So I'm excited.
And where are you physically located and how can folks get involved? You have a good website, I believe.
Yes, we do. We're located in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, is where our office is, but we serve an entire Northeast PA region. So we're all over the place, Pike, Wayne, and Monroe County, into New York. So, you know, we provide education to anybody who's, you know, willing to listen about sustainable living. So our website is seedsgroup.net. You can find us on the internet. And we've got a lot of different resources on there for folks to check up. You can sign up for home energy efficiency assessments on our website and learn about what's, you know, what's going on.
Is there anything coming up? What's your next event?
Our next event is March 27th. That is our Solar 101 program. So March 27th, down in Monroe County, we have a Solar 101 program coming up, working with the Broadhead Watershed Association down there. So that's the next program that's coming up. Everything else, we're working on dates yet. So, but it's all on our website.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
SEEDS stands for Sustainable Energy Education and Development Support. More information is available on the website, seedsgroup.net. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Northeastern Pennsylvania maple producers have an annual sweet event, and I was delighted to attend this year's self-guided maple tour, choosing one out of 15 Sugar House locations. My experience began at the Damascus Manor Community Center. There, a pancake breakfast was served by a welcoming, organized committee of friendly members that proudly offered locally tapped maple syrup produced by Augusta Acres. It tasted so good, I headed straight up Peggy Runway in Beach Lake to Augusta Acres, where Susan Todd and their son Carson Clickus proudly shared what makes their product exceptional.
Hi, my name is Susan Clickus. I'm here with my husband Todd Clickus and son Carson Clickus at Augusta Acres Farm on Peggy Runway Road in Beach Lake. And we're our first day of our maple syrup open house tour. And I'd like to start with talking about the sugar maple trees and the red maple trees that we have on our farm. We're a little unique here at Augusta Acres because most people think you just tap the sugar maples. But we only have a handful of sugar maples on our farm. We have mostly red maples. There's a couple advantages and disadvantages of that. Sugar maple tree is identified with the five lobes and so forth. The red maple has three lobes. Sugar maple turns the bright, usually yellow, orange in the fall. This will turn your bright reds. All maples have opposite branching. And that's how you could tell a maple instead of alternate branching, so you could look up and tell it. The disadvantage of a maple tree for us is that the sugar maple got its name from sugar maple because the sap in it has a higher concentration of sugar in it, about 2 to 3% sugar content. Our red maples' sugar content is between 1% to 1.5%. So the ratio of sap, it takes about 40 gallons of sugar maple sap to make 1 gallon of maple syrup. With our red maples, it's almost double. It takes us about 80 gallons of sap from red maples to get 1 gallon of finished maple syrup. So that's a lot more work. The other disadvantage is, if you notice the twigs of the sugar maple, they're very tight and pointy. And the twig of the red maple, these are like in the spring. You can look on the hillside and see the hillside's like getting a reddish tint to it. The buds on the red maple will burst open quicker. These sugar maple will stay real tight. The red maple, once the buds open up, the sapping season is done. Because what will happen is that will give the sap an off flavor, and you'll get a flavor called buddy syrup, and it is not a pleasant syrup. So our season ends shorter than if you had all sugar maples. Here we tap a little over 1,000 trees, and a tree has to be at least probably 14 years old, average, if it's in a good spot to tap, 38-inch circumference around, and we usually put one tap into a tree. We try to use very sustainable taps now. These are old-fashioned taps, and you can see how the circumference of it is quite large. And when you use that tap, it'll put a pretty big wound into the tree. The new taps or spiles, as they're called, either one, you can see how small of a little wound that will be. So this will be a drill will go in, and you'll tap that in gently because you don't want to force it in or anything like that. It would split the wood around the tap, and then it could leak. So you put that in, and you would attach. We're all on tubing right now because it's sort of just my husband and I, and mostly my husband. And with that many trees, it's all on tubing. This tap right here is called a check valve tap, and it helps us prolong our season a bit because it prevents the sap from going back into the tree as the atmospheric pressure is going back and forth. Sometimes the sap could go back in, like when you're siphoning something, and that little check valve will prevent that. And if sap would run back into the tree, you have the problem of it will cause bacteria to go back into the tree, and then the bacteria will kind of gunk up the sap hole, and then the sap would not flow out properly anymore. It would be done. So that helps us prolong our season here also. A couple of the problems we had this year with all that windy weather we had many trees go down, take down our lines, take down our main lines. So Todd spent weeks and weeks out there cleaning up trees down that were falling on the lines, branches down and so forth. And then we had a lot of animal damage this year on our tubing and so forth. Anything from squirrels will get there. At the end of the season, the spiles are taken out of the tree, and we force water up through the tubing to rinse it out, and then they force air through it for quite a while to dry it, and they're capped. But there's always probably a little residue that the animals can smell in there, animal chews. And of course, you can't use vacuum. We're on vacuum system. There can't be any holes in the tubing. So that all has to be replaced throughout the woods. So you're always looking for damage to the tubing too. So there's a lot of maintenance even before the sugaring season starts. We started tapping about 3 weeks ago, and it was with my son and my husband. It takes them probably a good week to tap. And that's, you know, with having their full-time jobs too, so they're tapping when they can. Mostly we make a dark syrup here, and all syrup now is grade A. And the difference is in color. It's usually the real light syrup. We never have that here. Our syrup is usually a darker syrup. The grades of the syrup go from a real light color, almost like a clover honey, to the real dark syrup like we have. It almost looks like a black syrup. But the darker the syrup you get, it's the more robust maple flavor. The lighter the syrup, the less maple flavor, which some people prefer. To me, I think it tastes just sweet. It doesn't have like maple flavor. Same with our honey. It's very, very dark, but that has a very complex flavors to it from all the things that the bees foraged over the whole season, because it's whole season honey. We only extract one time at the end of the season after the knotweed bloom after the goldenrods are out, and that gives it everything the dark color. So the darker the color, the more robust flavor and so forth. And our other product that we have besides the pure maple syrup, we get freshly emptied bourbon barrels from one of the distilleries over in New York State, over by Bethel Woods. When they empty it, Todd will call and say, when you have a barrel freshly emptied, a couple of them, he'll fly over and get them that same day, heat up our maple syrup that he keeps in kegs, and then fills the freshly emptied bourbon barrel. And then he closes it back up, lets it sit for about 6 to 8 months, and then opens it up, and then heats it back up, and that will evaporate off all the alcohol in there, so it's family-friendly. But you'll still have the taste of the bourbon from the barrel, and also the oak and the barrel has been charred for the bourbon and so forth to give the flavor, so it just takes it to a whole new level. Both syrups can be used in the same way. You know, everybody says, well, I don't eat pancakes much, but I try to promote cooking with maple syrup. Much more healthy for you. The bourbon maple syrup is excellent in coffee. It's excellent in cocktail making. You know, if you're going to make a cocktail and use a simple syrup, try that. It's awesome. And I think I mentioned coffee and tea. I mean, we use it in yogurt almost every day to make granola, salad dressing, so many things. Any recipe that uses white sugar, you can Google that. Like apple pie with maple syrup and substitute maple syrup for the white sugar in your recipe. So there's just, you know, you have to think outside the box. It's not, just not for pancakes anymore.
You're so knowledgeable. How long have you been doing this?
I grew up, my grandparents did mapling. Of course, that was backyard mapling. And then I did a little bit with as a family when I was growing up and so forth, and with my brothers and uncle and so forth. Todd and I have been doing about 20 years. We started just as backyard producers, probably tapping about 20, 30 trees. And now, like I said, we're up to about 1,200 trees. And that's about our limit right now, being that it's just a small group. We don't haul syrup from any place. A lot of producers will rent a sugar bush, which is the woods where the sugar trees are on, and then haul it. But we just don't have time to do that right now. So
it smells so good in here.
Thank you. We're lucky. This year is the first year in many years for the tour that we've had sap to be boiling. We actually moved the tour date back 3 weeks, and we were worried because the sap wasn't flowing. It was so cold out. But luckily, this last week it broke, and I think everybody has sap to be boiling, and it just gives the tour a whole new level when you actually have the sap boiling and you can smell the maple flavors and so forth. So,
and where is your product sold?
It's always here at a farm, so people can call us here at Augusta Acres. And we always have product available year-round. And also, it's available at Joe Robb's Health Food Store in Homestead. It's available at the Union in Narrowsburg. Joni has it at Proper to Go and her place on Main Street in Narrowsburg. It's also used at the Heron Restaurant. Woodlock Pines uses our syrup a lot. We also sell at CSAs and farm stores in southern Pennsylvania and in some in New Jersey.
It's such a pleasure to be in here and meeting you.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you stopped by.
Over the years, many things have changed, but many things have stayed the same. Native North Americans were the first ones to recognize pure maple syrup as a source of nutrition and energy. Researchers have since known that maple syrup has a higher nutritional value than all other common sweeteners. Every spring during March and April, when the winter weather starts to warm up to above freezing during the day, the sugar maple trees come to life and impact their sweet sap. A small hole is drilled into the tree. The watery maple sap is collected and boiled to concentrate the natural sugars to make pure maple syrup.
My name is Todd Klickes from Augusta Acres Farm in Beech Lake, PA, and we make maple syrup.
It smells so good in here. Describe this room that we're in.
We're in the evaporator room where the syrup is boiled down to make maple syrup. So over here, the sap comes in to the evaporator, into the hood, into the preheater, and preheats the sap by the steam produced from the flue pan. And then from there, it goes into the slope box, it goes into the flue pan, and it is boiling and creating steam. You're trying to get rid of all the water. So then out of the evaporator, the sap comes through. It comes to another float box, which regulates the level of the sap and syrup in the pans. And then here's the syrup pans, and they're channeled. And as it gets denser or sweeter, it's pushing the syrup to the exit point. And when it's like 7 degrees above the boiling point of water for the day is when syrup is made. Everything is a temperature probe, and I have an automatic draw off. And today, if it's 218.5, that's when syrup will come out. Past the boiling point, 212 is technically boiling point, but it goes by barometric pressure of the day.
And this big vat down here, I'm looking at a vat. What is that, 20 gallons of syrup?
Just about 20 gallons of syrup, yes. It draws off into, yep, and then it'll go through a filter press, and then I will keg it in barrels.
Anybody ever stick their head in there and just inhale?
No, it's too warm right now. It's very hot.
Gosh, where did you learn all this?
The internet, other sugar makers, and going to sugar making events and stuff.
It looks very contemporary in here. Describe this. Is it all stainless steel?
All stainless steel. Everything is stainless steel.
How do you keep it clean, free from bacteria?
Usually like RO water and sometimes with vinegar, just wipe it down. Inside is always is cleaned. Usually at the end of the season, the syrup pans I'll clean a few times during the season. The flue pan I'll clean usually at the end of the season, and a lot of times I'll let sap ferment in the pans, and then it's easier to clean out with the pressure washer.
Do you call this a sugar shack?
Yes. Sugar house, sugar shack, yes.
What is the dimensions of this room? It looks like a tiny house.
Yes, the total is 26 by 16.
And I like your little antique artifacts up there.
Oh, thank you.
They're snowshoes.
Yes, they are.
Well, thank you. You're so knowledgeable, and I love being in here. It's so contemporary.
Thank you.
And your syrup tastes delicious. I was at the pancake breakfast and had some of your syrup. It's still, I love the color of it.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Todd Klickus utilizes a reverse osmosis machine to remove about 50% of the water from the sap. Membranes separate pure water from the raw sap, resulting in a sweeter sap that is then boiled in the evaporators. An added benefit of using this technology is the production of large amounts of pure water that is used to clean the evaporators and the reverse osmosis machines.
Trees, it's just keeping the sap moving along the lines to keep everything flowing back to our collection area.
At Augusta Acres in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania, Carson was there to show us the pump house. Their terrain has a slight slope, and it allows gravity to help bring the sap to the sugar camp and prevent the pooling of sap in the lines. Pump house is situated in the lowest area, with the pump line strategically installed to bring the sap to the sugar camp. Pump houses have a storage tank with a vacuum pump and sap releaser. Augusta Acres is located at 229 Peggy Runway in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania, and on social media with their Facebook page. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr.
So much physics goes into it too, especially with like building a maple farm, all the lines that they pitched, and then a lot of our farm here, like everything down this way is below grade. Sap house here is above a lot of those lines. So if you look over on this side, we have sap ladders. We have multiple sap ladders throughout our sugar bush, which actually raise the sap up.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Eugene Thalman from Sprouting Dreams Farm, Michelle Long from the Seeds Group, and to Susan Todd and Carson Klickus
from Augusta Acres Farm in Beech Lake, Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live on our webpage, wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture conversations, and NPR.